There
right
it is.
Field, deep. Garcia's at the wall, and Ryan O'Hearn's first major league hit is a home run. Brett Phillips, that's deep to right field, and Brett Phillips' first hit as a Royal is a home run.
The young guns coming out to play last night for the Royals, hitting two-run home runs, Ryan O'Hearn and Brett Phillips. As you heard, it was the first major league hit for Ryan O'Hearn. That's a guy that during spring training was really doing a nice job hitting the cover off the ball and having home runs for the Royals. But it's one of those situations always when guys are blasting them out of the park in spring training, you don't think about it quite as much. They're playing in shorter porches. The dimensions aren't quite as long on those spring training fields. And you have a lot of guys that will have a boatload of home runs in spring training that are on the edge that don't make the big league club because it's like it's probably not going to translate. But Ryan O'Hearn, his first hit as a Royal translated to a home run last night. Brandon Phillips has been a pro athlete in the past. Brett Phillips for the Royals last night hit his first hit as a Royal, and that was a home run, as you heard. Both two-run home runs. Let's hear from Ned Yost on the home run from O'Hearn last night.
Yeah, I mean, a second at bat. It's exciting. It gives everybody a boost. You know, everybody's rooting for him to, you know, get his first major league hit. They know it's a big deal. And then for him to, you know, get a curveball. And the pitch was down, too. It wasn't like a horrible pitch and drive it out of the ballpark. But, you know, that's what he was doing in Omaha. He swung the bat really well.
Again, that's Ned Yost on Ryan O'Hearn. The Royals went 4-2. Over the White Sox, as you heard, O'Hearn got the home run. He's the first Royal since Clint Hurdle in 1977 to have a home run be his first hit. So his first major league hit. And then Phillips' homer, as we mentioned, his first hit as a Royal, made it 4-0. The Royals need to stop pitching to Matt Davidson. It's so weird because he's not good.
He's not good.
He's not terrible, obviously, or else he wouldn't be playing in the majors as long as he has with the White Sox. But this guy, let's look at him. Matt Davidson hits .226 on the season. He's got his on-base percentage is .332. Slug is .456. It's not like this guy's a stud and just the best hitter in the world. He has 16 home runs this season, and 8 of them have come against the Royals. He had another two-run homer last night off of Kevin McCarthy, who came in and pitched an inning. I love stats, you know, that they make up in baseball.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things that's come of light here in the last, I don't know how long it's been since they actually started recording the hold as a stat, but it's 4-0, and Kevin McCarthy comes in and gives up a two-run home run, and he still gets a hold. Like, I guess they held the lead, but it's just like, how do you like you coming
so
in here? And
I don't even know about that. That's like a stat for relievers.
Yeah,
like if they hold the lead, they
it's
get
like
a hold.
You get a save if you complete the game.
So now you have a hold.
And it's been in probably at least 5 years.
I don't know that I've ever heard anybody even talk about that.
Yeah, so he gets a hold. His 10th of the season, by the way.
Okay.
He gives up a 2-run home run and like pitched terrible, gave up 2 hits, two-run homer. Got out of the inning, but this is like, okay, let's give him something. Let's give him credit for a great outing.
Not blowing
the
lead.
Give him that hold. Yeah, let's give him credit for not just blowing the whole thing. Tim Hill came in and pitched a third of an inning, and then Jason Hamill an inning pitched. Willie Peralta, it was a little interesting for him. He did walk two, but he got everybody out, didn't give up any runs or hits, got a strikeout and got his 6th save. I believe it's 4 since the All-Star break that he's had as far as saves are concerned.
Yeah.
So the Royals win 4-2 over the White Sox. Royals are now 33-73. The White Sox are 37-69. So don't look now, but the Royals are coming right on the heels of the White Sox for 4th place and no longer in the cellar of the AL Central. If they can get a couple more wins here during the series, game 2 is tonight at 7:10. But right now they're only 4 games behind the White Sox in 4th place. Doesn't mean anything other than this is what would happen with the Royals is like they would start winning and mess up any chance of getting a number 1 pick or anything like that as horrible as they've been. And I'm one of those guys, I like to always say, I'm not going to be one that cheers for my team to lose just to get a better draft pick.
Right.
You never know if they're going to do the right thing with that pick anyway. Chiefs had the number one draft pick, and I don't know if Eric Fisher has really panned out to the talent of a number one draft pick. He's been consistent, and he's been on the line for the Chiefs, but he's not a stud offensive lineman
by any stretch of the imagination. No, I wouldn't say that he's performed like a top five draft pick.
No,
by any means.
So you just never know what's going to happen, even if you do get that number one pick.
But, no.
Right now, the Royals, they're actually 6-5 since the All-Star break, and you know, I haven't watched a lot of the Royals during this stretch, but I'm going to tell you right now, like some of these young guys that they have, like the Rosel Herreras of the world, he's hitting .288 now, mm-hmm. and I mean, he's young. He plays with a lot of passion. You can see that.
Yeah.
And then you got O'Hearn, who comes up and gets the homer. He traded for Phillips from Moustakas, and all the things that you hear from Brewers fans talking about that they're going to miss him, and he's really got a lot of potential. His bat needs to come around. He's hitting .167. He's been playing since Sunday and got his first hit of the season for the Royals in the two games. I guess that's just the second game that he played, but he'd never had a hit yet until later yesterday with that home run that came in the seventh inning, his first hit with the Royals. But that's one thing that you knew, that his bat was going to take a little bit of time to develop,
mm-hmm.
and that's coming along. But he's a great defensive outfielder, has a cannon for an arm, and obviously doesn't have the speed of Lorenzo Cain, but the Brewers fans, like I said on Monday, were saying, you know, this is a guy that compares to Lorenzo Cain in his development when the Royals got Cain for the trade for Greinke. So, you know, that was obviously something that looks good for the future for the Royals. You're like, oh, I like the sound of that. You know, if Brewers fans are saying the guy kind of reminds them of Lorenzo Cain, I'm cool with that.
That's not a bad comparison.
So, yeah, Brett Phillips got a home run last night. And you're looking at some of these young guys. Mondesi went 0-for-4 last night, but he shows potential. His bat's starting to come around a little bit, and you've seen that this year. So, you know, you're watching the Royals play right now, and even though they're not anywhere near where they need to be in overall record, they are 6-5 since the break. They're above .500 since the All-Star break in their last 11 games, which I don't think they've had a stretch of 11 games all season that they've gone 6-5, to be completely honest with you.
Yeah.
They've never played above .500 baseball since the beginning of the year. So,
no.
You know, there's things to look forward to.
Yep.
There's things that I'm seeing in these games that show me that it's a team that's not just completely given up, that they've quit and they don't want to play baseball anymore. You're not seeing that with the Royals. And I think a lot of that is, like I said, the younger guys, they're trying to prove themselves right now, too. It's a perfect opportunity for them to audition for the future of this club. And so we'll see how it all shakes out. Escobar did not start last night for the Royals, so we're starting to see a little bit of that, too, where he's not playing every single game and starting every single game. Rosel Herrera actually made his first big league start at third base. So it's still a kind of a crapshoot as far as where everybody's going to be playing when they're on defense. But you like and Bonifacio's young, too. You like some of the things that you're seeing from the younger group. Bonifacio's not hitting great. He's just .216 this year since coming back from the suspension for banned substances that he was suspended for, PEDs or whatever, at the beginning of the year. So he has not really been hitting great since he came back. But all in all, you're still seeing some good things from the Royals. You're not seeing good things from a former Royal. James Shields is now 4-13 on the season for the White Sox after last night. Pitched 7 innings, gave up all 4 earned runs, and didn't get a lot of support from his offense. Again, just the 2-run home run from Matt Davidson. So, I don't know. I kind of like what the Royals are doing right now as much as you can like it. You don't like the overall record, obviously, and nobody does, but I do enjoy the fact that they're just not going out there every day and saying, eh. They could just be like, eh, we're not very good. Let's just go through the motions and get this game over with, get the season over with. Only 2 months left in the season. Let's just coast here. And everybody knows we're not good and we're not supposed to be good.
Mm-hmm.
And you could easily just check it in. They're not doing that right now.
Well, when you get in a rebuild process like this, you need to have guys that want to perform and that are motivated and have got a little fire in them. And I think you see some of that. And that's a good sign that, you know, you can't in a rebuild process just sit back and, eventually it's going to get better and not make the effort and have the kind of intensity that you would have to be a successful club. You know, they say you practice like you play. Sometimes you play now like you want to play later, you know, and just get that motivation going and that momentum going, I guess is the word that I'm looking for, to help the rebuild along. Because the quicker that they do that, the quicker things are going to improve and the better chance they'll have to be back where they want to be on a shorter time frame, or sooner rather than later.
The crazy thing about the Royals is there's not a lot of teams that are starting a rebuild in the middle of the season.
Mm-hmm.
That's what they're doing, because the rebuild definitely did not start at the beginning of the season. When you're going to get guys like Lucas Duda, John Jay, guys like that, you're not rebuilding. You're just trying to stay afloat at that point. You're just hoping that you'll catch something here and something will pan out for you.
Yeah.
Now you've traded Moustakas. You traded for Rozel Herrera, those young guys that are coming up. Mm-hmm. You know, Ryan O'Hearn's part of this process. They're hoping. And now you've traded for Phillips. You've traded for another pitcher in that Moustakas deal. You've gotten rid of Moustakas, gotten players back for Kelvin Herrera, whether they're going to be good or not. Mm-hmm. They signed a 16-year-old, I believe he's from Japan, earlier this summer, I should say. So it's kind of weird to see that, because they really, once they drafted, that's when they really started the rebuild. It's just kind of crazy that it's happening in June, when most teams are like, oh, we're not going to be good. We better start. We better get on it. But then again, you're seeing they're getting guys that are major league ready, like Rozel Herrera, the Goodwin guy that they traded from the Nationals. We'll see if he's going to be anything and can pan out. They've made it known that Whit Merrifield's not available right now, and they obviously didn't trade him. Danny Duffy was not traded, and he can be part of helping all that process along, and I think that speeds it up, like we said, when they're drafting college pitchers and everything like that, that are more developed and feel like soon they'll probably be ready to go. The Singers and the Kowars of the world that they've picked, and you're hoping everybody else pans out, that they're able to draft in the past 2 or 3 years as well. And then obviously the 2019 draft is going to have a big effect on all that too, on a longer term rebuild. But it's kind of just, it's strange to see it happening in the middle of the season, but you got to do it when you know you got to do it, and that's what Dayton Moore's doing right now.
Yeah, why wait?
Yeah,
you know,
no, you don't.
Exactly.
If
the deal,
you can do it, you don't
there's
wait.
No reason to wait. There's no time like the present, but like you said, it's nice to see them, you know, looking now to place pieces of the puzzle together to, you know, build a team that can be successful in the future, whereas in the early part of the season they were, you know, looking for bodies to fill roster spots.
Yeah.
You know, so that's a good point to point out the difference in the moves they made earlier in the season versus the moves they're making now.
The only thing that's disappointing to me is that they couldn't unload Duda to get something back for him, because it's a one-year guy. And, I mean, it would have been people apparently don't need, like, first baseman. People need second baseman. There's been so many second basemen traded in this right before the trade deadline. We'll talk a little bit more about some of the trades that happened yesterday before the deadline, but would have been nice if somebody would have taken on Duda and you got another prospect or something for him.
Yeah,
because I mean, he's hitting .236, he's got 9 home runs, but he did miss a period of time on the DL. So, you know, some of these guys that are getting traded for that have 15 home runs but they're hitting .205, like the guy from the Reds that went to the Braves, and I forgot his name and I don't want to pull up, but you know, Duvall, I think was his name.
Oh,
okay. And the guy gets traded, is hitting .205, but has like 15 or 16 home runs. Well, Duda like compares to some of that. He plays a different position, but he compares to some of that with the time that he's missed. 9 home runs, .236 average. I mean, he's still got a little pop, and recently he's had some pop as well. So I was kind of hoping that somebody would pick him up and say, hey, we need Lucas Duda on our team. But apparently nobody needs Lucas Duda. Royals were glad Lucas Duda was playing for the Mets in 2015. I can tell you that much. But maybe that's still haunting him. Maybe people don't want Lucas Duda because he threw wide of home plate and gave the Royals a tie game in the ninth inning there in the World Series. But that was his connection to the Royals before he signed in the offseason this year. But again, the Royals didn't make any other trades other than Mike Moustakas on Friday, and since then they kind of stood pat. Nobody else was there. Was probably people that were on the block, but the ones that there would listen to offers for probably didn't bring anything near what they would have needed to pull the trigger and say, hey, goodbye, Danny Duffy, you know. And Danny Duffy, by the way, is another guy that he struggled a bit last time out, but last night that pitch count is still an issue with Danny Duffy.
Yeah,
he had 5 2/3 innings and threw 112 pitches. So that's still just that's always the concern with Duffy. He walked 4, struck out 7, gave up 6 hits, but didn't give up any runs. No earned runs. It was definitely not the best Danny Duffy can do. But you take any outing when he doesn't allow a run. I mean, it doesn't matter how it comes to that. If you can pull off no earned runs, and especially by giving up 10 base runners, you know, you got to feel good about that. But Duffy still, he's dealing with them control issues, and it would be nice to see him at some point just kind of figure all that out like he did for that 2-month stretch a couple of years back. But as I always say, kind of at this point of somebody's career, at this point of a season, whatever I'm talking about, kind of you are what you are by that point. I don't think there's going to be a whole lot of change in Danny Duffy anymore from that aspect. But you take what you can get from him and appreciate his performance last night, even though he wasn't at his best. He still didn't allow any runs, didn't give up any home runs, which is in this day and age always key in baseball. So the Royals went 4-2 last night over the White Sox. Again, and now just 4 games behind Chicago for 4th place in the American League Central. Game 2 of the 3-game series is tonight. Jacob Junis, 5-11 with a 5.06 ERA, starting for the Royals against Dylan Covey of the White Sox. He's 4-6, 5.40 ERA, 7.10 first pitch tonight from Chicago. Also on Tuesday night, the New York Mets, I think, just wanted to go home fairly quickly last night after the game, right after it started.
Okay.
The Washington Nationals scored a franchise record 25 runs.
Oh, wow.
The Nationals were up 19-0 after 5 innings.
Wow, I didn't see that
one. Yeah. 25-1 after 8.
Oh, man.
The Mets saved face a little bit, scored 3 in the ninth. 25-4 looks just a little bit better than 25-1. When you give it up 25 runs, I don't think it matters a whole lot. 21 run loss is the worst in Mets franchise history. 25-4. It was 19-0 after 5.
That's amazing.
Somebody said preseason football start already? Like, right. I didn't think that was supposed to start till this weekend.
I don't know. I've never heard anybody only getting 2 safeties in a game. Wow.
21. Yeah, 25-4.
That's not too good.
And it's never good in baseball when you lose by 21.
It's not good in anything, let alone baseball.
Yeah, in any sport.
The only thing that might be worse than losing by 21 in baseball would be maybe soccer.
Yeah, yeah. I'm going to guess that's never happened before.
I'm going to go out on a limb and agree with you.
I don't know. You never know. Maybe some friendly or something between some powerhouse country and some country that's just not good at soccer, but... Not the only thing you could think of, but yeah, I agree. 21 run loss is that's the worst in any sport other than soccer or hockey. You know, you're gonna lose 21 goals in a hockey match. Yeah, those would be the only two sports that you would be worse than losing by 21 in baseball. 21 in basketball happens a lot. 21 in football happens a lot. Yeah, those aren't just out of the realm things, but 21 run loss in baseball is not good at all. Nationals set a franchise record with 25 runs last night. Also in baseball, several more trades were made on Tuesday in Major League Baseball ahead of that non-waiver deadline. Jonathan Scope, one of another second baseman that got traded. We talked about Ian Kinsler the day before, got traded as well. And now Jonathan Scope, second baseman, gets traded to the Brewers for Jonathan Villar and 2 prospects. Here's another example. Scope's hitting .244 with 17 home runs, 40 RBI.
Mm-hmm.
The Brewers, it's interesting when you look at and see what the difference is each season and what people are giving up for what kind of players. You know, it depends on who's available. Bryce Harper was supposedly available, but you're still not just going to give him away for nothing if you're the Nationals, especially if you think and hope that you can sign him again here in the offseason, do a long-term deal and keep him in Washington. You're going to want a lot for him to trade him in that realm. He's really and he's not hitting well, but he's got 25 home runs. He's .220 with 25 homers is more attractive than .244 with 17 and 40 RBI. But there's just not a lot out there is what I'm trying to say as far as big names that are just playing off the charts that are going to be free agents. And it, you know, the couple years back when Edison Volquez would have been one that was available, his numbers weren't great. He wasn't pitching the best. at the time of the deadline, but still was probably one of the highest regarded starting pitchers that were on the market because of the market and where it was. Mm-hmm. So Scopes 244, 17 home runs. The Orioles also shipped out right-handed starting pitcher Kevin Gausman to the Braves. This guy's 5-8 with a 4.43 ERA. Now the ERA is probably around average right now. The 5-8 record is probably a lot to do with the team that he's pitching for and the Orioles, who are the worst team in baseball. So, you know, records can be deceiving a little bit on guys like that that are going to be traded at the deadline because they're unloading because somebody wants somebody that might have potential to be better when they come to a better team with a better offense that's playing better baseball, and that would be the Braves. And Gausman goes to the Braves, again, 5-8 with a 4.43 ERA. The Braves do reliever Darren O'Day for three prospects and international bonus money. There's a lot of that going around on these trades, international bonus money. And I don't know what you do with all that. I'm guessing it's helping sign prospects from Latin American baseball. And if you want to get the ones that come over from Japan or Korea or China or wherever they're, I'm guessing that's all under the realm of international money, bonus money that you can use to sign those guys. Cubs also picked up right-handed reliever Brandon Kinsler from the Nationals. As we said yesterday, the Nationals kind of a team that have just decided that they're selling now all of a sudden. Even their record to 500 after their big win last night, but they did trade Brandon Kinsler to the Cubs for right-handed pitcher John Romer. Kinsler's 3.59 ERA, two saves, and leads the Nationals with 15 holds this year. All-star catcher Wilson Ramos was traded by the Rays to the Phillies in exchange for cash or a player to be named later. It's kind of an interesting trade there. A player to be named later for an all-star. I was weird when I read that. Ramos isn't having like the greatest season because he's been sidelined by injury, and I think that probably had a little bit to do. He was the starting catcher in the all-star game but didn't get to start because he had a hamstring injury. Mm-hmm. Salvador Perez took over that spot for him. But when he is playing, he's hitting .297 with 14 home runs. That's more like it. You want a guy that can get on base, 14 homers and a catcher. Wilson Ramos headed to the Phillies, and the Rays are selling. They also traded Chris Archer to the Pirates for three prospects. Pitcher Archer, a two-time All-Star, 3-5, 4.31 ERA and 17 starts the season. Again, all that could change with a better team with the Pirates. We'll see what Archer can do this year as well. And another second baseman goes, Brian Dozier from the Twins, who's had a lot of success against the Royals as well. And Dozier's headed out. Again, .224 average this year for Dozier, but has 16 homers and 52 RBI. So you're trading average for hoping that you can get some power from him. And the Dodgers have enough around him that they've got a better lineup than the Twins do, obviously.
Protect
Twins,
him a little bit.
Yeah, the Twins get Logan Forsyth and two minor league prospects back from L.A. in that deal. So some of the trades, a lot of activity yesterday right before the deadline, which you – some years you get a lot, some years the market's just not there, and mm-hmm. people aren't willing to give up prospects for what little is out there. But there's a lot of prospects and cash and everything being traded around yesterday for guys that, quite frankly, their numbers look pretty average. But every team out there, that's what the wild card, too, is there's so many people that think they have a chance here to get to the playoffs, so you're going to see more of that. Selling for average guys that you hope are going to be better than average on a good team. The Royals did that last year. They got three average guys from the San Diego Padres, and it's turned into a disaster. None of those guys have panned out. Mm-hmm. Buchter didn't even last. He's not even there anymore. They traded or they got rid of nobody's good. Cahill didn't do anything. He's gone. Maurer's a human gas can. As we say, I don't even know why they still bring him out, especially in important situations. I realize the season's lost, but so that's an example of getting guys that Maurer had like 30 saves last year for the Padres. It's like getting guys that even at that point, Maurer's a little bit above average probably, but he's not playing for a good team. He had like 30 saves and they only had like 30 some wins, I think, when they traded. So, I mean, he was getting out there and pitching, okay. But they weren't winning a lot. So it was a different situation coming into a team that was trying to win, and it didn't work out. So, but that's what you see right now. I mean, if you look at the standings right now, Tampa Bay's they're selling, and right now they're fourth in the wild card race. The American League's a little bit different than the National League from that aspect. because it's kind of a weird year here for the American League. A lot of years there's five or six teams that are fighting for two spots for the wild card. The Yankees are 68-37. They're six games ahead of everybody for the first wild card. And then the Mariners are 63-44. The Oakland Athletics are 63-46, one game behind the Mariners. And then the next closest is the Rays at 54-53, nine games back. Mm-hmm. At the beginning of August, you don't really see that a whole lot. Usually there's going to be like the Rays, the Angels, the Twins. There's going to be six or seven teams here that we're looking at have a possibility to get those two wild card spots. It's not the case in the American League. So that's why the Rays are selling right now. That's why the Twins are getting rid of Dozier. I mean, they're 13.5 games behind the wild card, you know. But the National League is where we're looking at, and you're seeing a lot of these teams making trades that don't make a lot of sense sometimes, but they're trying to stay in it. In the National League, we've got 8 teams within 5 games of making it into the playoffs. So that's normal. That's what you usually see. Brewers are 63-47. They have the first wild card right now. The Braves, there's 3 teams right now tied for the second wild card. The Braves, Rockies, and Dodgers are all tied for the second wild card. Now, the Rockies and Dodgers are tied for first place in their division, too, so that would one of those would get canceled. Actually, no, the Diamondbacks are now in first place of the West. So those two teams are tied for the wild card for the second wild card. And then the Pirates, who make the deal for Archer, they're 3 games back. Cardinals and Giants are 4.5 games back. The Nationals are still only 5 games back of the wild card, but they're selling. So it just sometimes you wish the Royals would have been like the Nationals. They've kind of realized, you know, we're 5 games back, but we're probably not going to get back into this thing. Let's not go trading for Melky Cabrera and 3 players from the Padres just to try to save something and make it to the playoffs. You wish that the Royals would have done what the Nationals are doing this year. Now, the Nationals early, they went real early and got Kelvin Herrera to try to make a push, but it's a team that's kind of fallen down. And the chemistry's not good. Pitchers are fighting in the dugout, and getting into it, and it's just not good for the Nationals. But you kind of wish the Royals would have done what the Nationals are doing right now at the deadline last year, and just instead of trying to hold on and trade Matt Strom for all those guys from the Padres, and Matt Strom's having a way better year than anything the Royals have gotten back from that. Mm-hmm. And so you wish they would have done what the Nationals are doing here and just kind of cut your losses and say, let's move on. Now, the Nationals probably have more potential to quickly turn things around within a year and get the right guys on their team that can fix that. But you're seeing the Brewers have made trades. Obviously, they traded for Mike Moustakas. They've made deals bringing guys in. The Braves have made a trade, try to get another hitter in the lineup that we talked about with Duvall. The Rockies are a team that really didn't make a lot of noise here at the deadline, so they didn't try to fight for a whole lot. Maybe they feel like they're where they need to be. The Dodgers made a trade yesterday for Dozier. They're trying to get better. They traded for Machado before the deadline. So the Dodgers have made moves. That was the Pirates, as we said, traded for Archer yesterday. They're trying to make moves. And Cardinals traded Tommy Pham yesterday and got a guy back from the Rays. I don't know how hard the Cardinals are trying to fight for this. And then the Giants are behind. I mean, look at this NL West. And everybody's within 4.5 games of making the playoffs, except for the Padres, where Hosmer went. And they're not good. They're 42-68. Worst team in the National League right now. So congratulations on spending all that money on Eric Hosmer in the offseason. Has not worked out for the Padres.
No.
And for the Royals, if they would have spent the money on him, what would they be? Maybe 36-70 now instead of 33-73? I mean, it wouldn't have made much of a difference with the group that they have. So, but if you look at that National League West, I mean, the Giants are 4.5 games out and everybody else ahead of them. Dodgers, Rockies are tied for the second wild card, and the Diamondbacks are obviously leading the division, so they're in the playoffs if they would start today. So the National League, what I'm saying, is a lot different than the American League. There's going to be a lot to be decided here in the last 2 months of the season in the National League. Now, the American League, barring some wacky situation, looks fairly clearly like it's going to be the Red Sox, Indians, and Astros winning their division. Mm-hmm. The Yankees look pretty safe to be the first wild card right now. And then between the Mariners and A's in the AL West to see where they finish. And there's just a one game difference between the two right now. You could probably almost book it right now that it's going to be the four teams I mentioned I mean, there's going to have to be some kind of total breakdown to where there's injuries. These teams just stop playing like they have all year, because this isn't like something that these teams just turned a switch on and became good and made a run like the Dodgers did.
Yeah, this is what they've been this year.
Yeah, it's just who they are, mm-hmm. and it's been all year. And like I said just a little bit ago, you kind of are who you are at this point. I just don't see.
Yeah.
I mean, the only team that has a chance to kind of mix that up a little bit, there's really nobody. I mean, the Rays, like I said, are the closest, and they're still 9 games behind.
Yeah.
So, of any chance to even get close. So, and they're selling. So, I think everybody's kind of made their peace in the American League that this is just a fight between the Mariners and Athletics to see who's going to get the second wild card, and everybody else is out. We're done. But the National League, like I said, it's a log jam in the wild card standings. It should be interesting to see how that finishes in the National League in Major League Baseball. All right, so we're going to wrap with this. And this happened, I believe, on Monday. But first chance to kind of talk about it here. The school opened on Monday. What school am I talking about? Well, I said this could have been our good news of the day here earlier today. And it's about LeBron James. And, you know, everybody, let me preface this by saying, because he did this doesn't make him a better basketball player. Because you know there's going to be people out there that are going to use this to his credit as the greatest of all time.
Right.
So I just want to preface that, and I'm not going to talk about that at all anymore. But because LeBron James is a guy that has always been about trying to help community and things like that.
He's a humanitarian,
exactly. And he does a lot of good things, and he makes himself public. And obviously, I mean, all of that comes with being of that status. You make yourself public to try to improve your image at one point, at some point. You know, you can hide behind some things, but, he's not hiding behind anything on this. I mean, if I'll give LeBron James credit, I will give him credit for being a great person in the community, and I mean, he's never been in trouble with the law or anything like that. The only people that dislike him, honestly, the only reason people dislike him is because of comparisons to other players.
Yeah.
That's it. I mean, there's nothing about this guy that you should actually hold on to and hold on to some grudge against him and dislike him when you actually look at what he does. LeBron James, this is coming from the Lakers website where this news came out, and this is where I'm kind of reading it from because it gives me more background information on it. LeBron James has won multiple NBA titles, MVP trophies, Olympic gold medals, but the day before his foundation's elementary school, the I Promise School, opened its doors in his hometown of Akron, Ohio, James tweeted that this would be one of the greatest moments, if not the greatest, of my life. He says when the I Promise School opened, see, the skinny kid from Akron who missed 83 days of school in the fourth grade had big dreams. And LeBron James, born in Akron 33 years ago, dedicated much of his adult life to bettering his home city. The I Promise School will be King James's crown jewel, is what the story says here from the Lakers. 240-person population of third and fourth graders made up of students identified by Akron Public Schools as behind in critical academic areas and other factors. James insisted that his institution be a public school, as he related, he could relate to the pitfalls that Akron youth could face. Mm-hmm. So he insisted that this would be a public school. NBA superstar says he missed 82 days of school back when he was in fourth grade, saying that the year was filled with lots of empty days that led to a no future thought process. And so that's why he's kind of going and targeting this age of kids. Mm-hmm. And he went on to say, my mom didn't have a car. We didn't have stability day to day where I didn't know where I'd be living. So there was no way I could even get there. Sometimes to get to school, it was a surprise to me when I woke up and I was actually going to school. So again, this is kind of why he's done this and opened this school. Based some of the basic things about the I Promise School for LeBron James, it's free tuition. It's a public school. It's free tuition, free uniforms, which is kind of rare at a public school that you'd be wearing uniforms.
Yeah.
But free uniforms, free bicycle and helmet to get where you need, free transportation within 2 miles. Obviously, big city, you can't have free transportation for everybody. Free breakfast, lunch, and snacks. There's a food pantry for families, GEDs, and job placement services for parents. So you know, some of those adults that have fallen behind that are parents of some of these kids can get help as well. And it's also anybody that graduates from the I Promise School, guaranteed tuition to the University of Akron. So if you want to go to college at Akron, if you graduate from this, I'm guessing graduate from fourth grade. I mean, if that's who's going to school there, then
you go through the whole thing,
and now, and in your back pocket when you grow up, you've got free tuition to University of Akron for every student who graduates. So
it's pretty solid.
When you're out talking bad about LeBron James or things like that, just kind of understand that there's more to a person than what they do on the basketball floor. There's more to a person than what you see in the public eye. And obviously this is made public and it improves his image. There's no question about it, but there, all this stuff that I just read is not all about just trying to improve his image. It's about trying to improve his city. It's about trying to improve the way of life for kids that were just like him. Like he said, he felt like there was no future for me. I didn't know what was going on. You know, I was lucky to wake up and know I was going to school. And so this is something that these kids don't have to worry about. If they get, I mean, all the options to get yourself to the school, the free transportation, tuition, uniforms, bike and helmet, and, you know, if it comes down to it, you ride your bike to school, you know. And so just kind of think about all that before you're dogging a guy just because of what he's doing or what he's not doing.
Right.
Think about what some of these guys are doing in the community. And LeBron James isn't the only one that's doing it. There's a lot of professional athletes that have given back to either their hometown or their community. I mean, Kevin Durant recently is paying for tuition for people to go to college that can't afford it, you know, and like full rides for 4 years to go to school. And, you know, that's just another example. But just don't just to kind of dismiss everything just based on what guys are doing on the court or on the field. Don't dismiss everybody that has their political opinion on the court or on the field, because they might be doing some pretty good things off of it, too. Yeah.
You know, how many homes has Warrick Dunn built for people in Florida?
Exactly. Yeah.
You know, guys like that. But, yeah, I mean, it's an outstanding opportunity. It's really an incredible, some might even call it miraculous, opportunity to some extent for kids in that area. And so a lot of credit to LeBron James for giving back and doing that. And then, you know, hopefully a lot of people will take advantage of it, you know, because it's not one of these things that the guy's going to put it out there and be, well, I'm going to do this because it'll look good, and hopefully a lot of people won't necessarily want to do it because then it'll cost a bunch of money. It's not like that. This is an open opportunity and a great opportunity for as many people, I think, as will reach out and try to take advantage of it.
Yeah.
So hopefully they will.
Some more about the school. It's kind of a little bit different school as far as when they go to school. It boasts a 20-to-1 student-teacher ratio, year-round programming. So that's kind of interesting there. Year-round school. They go 9-to-5 school day that keeps children engaged. And it says, understanding the challenges that come with being underprivileged in Akron, the I Promise School also provides all of its students, like we said, free breakfast, lunch, and snacks. Busing provided for the kids who live within 2 miles, as we said. And every child receives a free bike, like we talked about. I would guess that you can hit them to a bus stop if you're, you know, if you're not within that 2 miles, you can make sure they are within 2 miles, and somewhere there'll be a bus stop, I'm guessing. It doesn't go into a whole lot of detail on that. But Akron Mayor Daniel Horgan said, a lot of gratitude goes to our hometown hero, LeBron James. I can think of no better gift that LeBron can give to the next generation of Akron than a solid education, a supportive network of teachers and mentors. Generational change was a phrase often used to describe the impact that I Promise School expects to have on Akron communities. So, good on LeBron James for doing that and starting the new I Promise School in his hometown of Akron in Ohio. So take back all the bad things you've said about LeBron James, folks. Or don't. I mean, like I said yesterday, I'm not going to be the one that tells you what to do when it comes to the sporting world. But think about it before you're bad-mouthing athletes. Kind of look and see what they do in the community and see what they're doing. And some of the guys that, you know, that end up being GOATs, Scott Norwood, you know, he's an example. Like, what does he do for your community? What kind of person is he? Don't hold everything. Jack Cantelli was a perfect example at K-State on their football team. You know, don't hold everything that happens on the field against a guy that is doing everything right in life and off the field is doing everything that a person should be doing. Colin Klein would be a good example. Tim Tebow. Why do we, you know, do that with those kind of guys that are just, they're doing everything right. And sometimes things are going to go bad on the field. It's human nature. So think about all that before you start dogging and bad-mouthing all these athletes and all the money they're making. What are they giving back? Because LeBron James is making a lot of money, but in his entire career, he's been giving a lot back, too. Mm-hmm. So kind of think about all that. Just kind of food for thought today. Extending on our good news of the day today.
There it is. It's been the good news version of the sports ticket.
Opening the
Royals are moving in the right direction, and LeBron's not such a bad guy.
Yeah, exactly. So, thanks for tuning into the sports ticket today, everybody. And we'll talk to you again tomorrow here on Kitty Country 94.